Welcome to the Time and Motion podcast with me, your host, Lee Stevens. For over 25 years, I've worked with businesses all over the world to improve the technology and the people within them. In this podcast, I share some of my experiences and I chat to guests who generously share their stories of how to, or in some cases, how not to, live a productive life. I hope you enjoy the show. David, how the hell are you?
I'm good. It's been a very long time since we've seen each other, actually.
Yeah, it's been a while. We were trying to work out when it was we kind of last saw each other, right? It was some time ago.
It would be at least 7 years, I reckon.
Seven?
Maybe six.
Okay, yeah. I had hair then, probably.
Yeah, you were probably just pulling them out at that stage.
Okay, so David, thank you very much for coming on to the show. I mean, I think it's been great to try and get as many people as I can who I know, who've got some expertise that they can add for the show. So before we kind of get into who you are, what you do, etc., so just tell us a bit about you. So where did you grow up, Dave?
So I'm originally from the very North Highlands of Scotland. So a town called Wick, which if anyone knows where Scotland is, basically go to the top and where the ocean is, just come a little bit, sorry, not the ocean, the sea, just come a little bit north and it's right on the mainland, just at the peak right there at the top.
Okay, so would have been a bit of a different childhood to maybe most people in New Zealand, or was it similar?
I would say it'd be weather-wise very different. So, like, you know, there's the joke in Scotland that the best day of summer is the best day of the year, you know. And being so far north, we were geographically closer to Norway than London. So, for example, during winter, it was dark from sort of 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and, you know, in summer it was daylight to about, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. So, yeah, quite different. We used to get the odd puffins as well, which, if anyone knows, it's an Arctic bird. So, and on a good night, we used to get the Northern Lights as well. So, yeah, it's quite a different place to kind of grow up.
Good. And I can't ask you the Christchurch question I ask people from Christchurch, which school you went to, because most people probably won't know, right? A bit like myself. So, right. So we went to Grange Hill, right? That's what we tell most people.
Yeah, Wick High School, you know, so but then I show people pictures of it because it's actually, you know, it had turrets and, you know, spiral staircases. So, you know, it looks like something out of Harry Potter. So,
yeah, absolutely. All right. Okay, great. So what was you like at school?
What was that, sorry?
What was you like at school?
What was I like at school?
Yeah.
I hung around with what you'd probably call the geeks. So, you know, we were the ones that were always doing stupid things, but nothing illegal, of course. Just, you know, wasn't probably the best student, I'd imagine. I don't think I apply myself very well. Ironically, I failed math, which is hilarious because my entire career focuses around percentages and numbers now. So, yeah. You know, that's quite a funny irony right there. But I can't remember, to be honest.
Okay. And what was you like when you was younger?
What was I like when I was younger? I was obsessed with Superman, obsessed with Fireman Sam, if you go further enough back. Always had quite an imagination, so was always playing games in regards to, you know, making huts and, you know, whatever game I could think of.
Okay. So before we kind of get really into the good stuff about what you do at the moment. What I always like to do is just find out where people have come from, right? In terms of their background and their career, etc. So what was your first job? Can you remember what that was?
First proper job or like teenage job?
First job ever.
Yeah, first job ever was a paper boy. So yeah, did that for, I can't remember. I think it was 13, somewhere around there. So yeah, I had a paper round. That was my very, very first job.
Yep. And what did you learn from that?
I don't know if it's something you want to put on the air, but I remember once I should have really gone to the bathroom before I started my round. So, you know, that was wasn't a very nice experience, really needing to go to the bathroom. But it very much taught me that the value of getting up early, doing a job and then having to go to work. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I said on the last show, I think some of those early jobs we do can instill some really good values in you, right? And you actually learn some of your best traits, I think, from those early jobs. So, yeah, where are you now then? What are you up to?
So I'm self-employed. So I've been self-employed for around 4 years now. So I've got a company called Newbrook. So what we specialize in is access to capital markets for New Zealand-based SMEs. So we specialize in, you know, helping businesses buy businesses is one thing. We usually work on that buy side. We help raise funding. So that's through debt and equity solutions, depending on, you know, what's needed. We do a bit of valuation work around that. And then obviously just any other general kind of advisory work needed around a transaction, yep. Essentially. So it's kind of a transactional based business.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to get onto the show was I think finance is one of those taboo subjects, and it's probably something that everyone claims they know a lot about, but actually in reality, it's, you know, it's only when you actually go to need money, or you actually go and try and find money, it's actually quite hard, right? And so I think, yeah, having a few people in your network who know about this stuff is great. And I thought it'd be really good to get you on the show and kind of tell us about that, and so we could share some of that knowledge. So Newbrook then, how did that all come about?
So I was in one of the major banks. So I was there for about 6.5 years, and I was offered a job to leave the bank and go and work for an accounting firm as like a commercial development person, whatever the title was, I can't remember. But what I found was that I'm not very good at selling GST returns, and it doesn't really spin my wheels. But what did was that my clients and other people from my networks were coming to me asking to help them raise funding because the banks were being too difficult at the time. And then they started asking me about this whole world of private equity and venture capital, which sort of made me look at it. And I realized that there was this big gaping hole in the New Zealand market between venture capital and private equity, the sort of middle market. And so looked further and further into it and explored it. And, you know, I still vaguely remember it because my wife had just given birth to our third child and decided to take the punt. And actually, I think there's something here and I'll go out and do it on my own, and spent the days drumming up business. And then at nights, I would sit there with my newborn daughter on me while I studied corporate finance into the wee hours of the morning on my laptop. So that's kind of how it came about. And then it just, like all these natural things, it just grows from there.
Yeah. And what I try to do is try and educate people about what some of these terms are. So venture capital, how would you explain what VC is to the layman or to the average guy and guy girl on the street?
So venture capital is early stage capital. So it ranges from, like, you might have heard of terms pre-seed and seed. That's kind of where venture capital sits. So like a pre-seed is where, you know, it's essentially the same, think of seeding an idea. You know, it's sort of putting in the initial funding to get a business going. And then seed capital is more where, you know, the business is up and running. It might not be revenue generating just yet or very close to, but it needs that next injection of cash to get going so it can start generating proper revenues.
Yeah. So for example, there's venture capital where you go and need to get some money from someone or somewhere. And then there's bootstrapping, right? Which is you beg, borrow, steal, and you find some money down the back of the sofa. And
friends, family, and fools, as they say.
Friends, family, and foes. So that's typically how the two routes to fund the business, essentially.
Well, there's also debt funding as well.
Okay. So explain to me what that means.
So debt funding is, you know, as you go to a bank or another financer and you get a loan against the business as a startup loan. So you're generally talking smaller amounts, obviously, because you're talking about a business that might not be generating revenue just yet. So, you know, probably in a region of somewhere between 20 to 50,000, maybe more, depending on the nature of the business and stuff. So that's the other way. But obviously, if you take on debt, you've got to pay it back. So you've got to be pretty confident, and the funder has to be pretty confident that you're going to generate revenues and generate profits, which can obviously service debt.
And that was always been, I suppose, the more traditional route, right? So that's where, you know, Joe Bloggs wants to go and sell some widgets. He's going to set up a widget factory. And, you know, 50 years ago, he would have had to have gone to Barclays in the UK or Westpac over here or one of those banks and borrowed some money. And he'd had to have done a business plan and would have had to do all that kind of good stuff. We'd make projections and forecasts. He's probably got no idea if that's going to truly happen. So is it fair to say that's probably more of a traditional route to funding a business?
Typically, I mean, there's always been equity markets, isn't there? You know, like right back in the days where, you know, where is it in the States, you know, the origins of the stock, Wall Street Stock Exchange was, you know, people trading bits of paper under a tree. But that was always later state businesses. So there's always been private equity and venture capital based investment. But traditionally, yeah, the most common route was, you know, either bootstrapping through family, fools, friends, personal savings, or going to the bank and getting a startup loan and producing a business plan and a forecast. And, you know, as we always said, in the bank, I've never seen a bad forecast. You know? I've also never seen one that's right. So, yeah, that's always sort of been the traditional role. Whereas the main difference is obviously with a venture capital investor is they're taking a significant chunk of your company up front because they're riding that risk curve at the start of it.
Okay, so three different routes. Is there a split or something, you know, in terms of what you see the businesses in New Zealand kind of use? Is it like, you know, 33, 33, 33? Is it, you know, 50% VC? What's the kind of the splits between most business when they're seeking capital?
Relative to the industry and the type of business. So not all businesses are going to fit venture capital. And the reason is this is what people don't think about is that a venture capitalist is a business in itself. They need to make a return, and they get a return from selling your business down the line. Yeah. So if you want to go and open a shoe shop and that's all you want to do, that's fine, that's great, but it's not a venture capital deal.
Yeah.
If you want to build up a tech company that can be exported offshore and then sold for a, you know, a 5x revenue-based multiple, that's more of a venture capital deal.
Okay.
So,
And how would you describe the venture capital market in New Zealand compared to places like the States?
Oh, I mean, chalk and cheese, you know, like the reality. And that's the nature of our size, though, isn't it? You know, like the VC market in New Zealand is, it's actually pretty good. It's been getting better over the years. There's a lot more players now, but it's just clearly not to the same scale as the United States. So, you know, like we, when we were sort of talking to some of the private equity and venture capital firms in the US a year or so ago, you know, give you put in retrospect, I think the venture capital funding in New Zealand last year was about $367 million. That's probably one round of one VC in the States. You know, yeah. we talked to one guy that was to be fair, private equity, so it's a little bit the next level up, and their last round was around $1 billion. And you know, it's like, well, you could literally buy our VC market a couple of times over with that.
Yeah. And so how easy is it to get money these days for businesses?
Not easy at all. It's very difficult. And again, that's a bit of a contraction from the banking sector, as we've seen. So, you know, it's been happening for a number of years now, and it's to do with, you know, a whole bunch of reasons, but, you know, fancy terms like risk-weighted assets and return on capital and such, and they're making more money out of funding home loans. So, you know, why put money into risky assets like businesses where, you know, you, well, I would argue housing's not as safe as it used to be. But yeah, that's where they can make more margin off that. So there's been a contraction there in regards to business lending. So that's made it harder for businesses to get traditional funding from the banks. So we've seen an increase in the non-bank funding sector, which is, you know, private institutions, which is rising year on year, but it's still nowhere near to the scale of, you know, obviously your big four institutional banks that we have. And then the VC stuff, as I say, it's been growing year on year. Probably see a drop this year, and that's more to do with the global economic climates.
Yeah. So your job is to find the people with money and connect them with the people that might need the money?
Pretty much. So as I always say to people, it's like my job is to essentially pitch you. It's not to, you know, some people use the term brokering. It's like, well, you know, the bulk of our business is in the consulting side to get them ready for market and understanding where the deal is and doing the stuff that's needed in regards to, you know, cash flow modeling, valuation, IMs, or if it's debt, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we do on the debt side as well. And I can get you in the room with the investors, but I can't guarantee they're going to invest because ultimately they're not investing in me, they're investing in you. So you've got to be able to sell that sizzle and, you know, share the dream. We can just sort of help along the way and help you formulate, you know, is this the right way about it? The biggest thing where we add a lot of value is probably around the valuation because it's more of an art than a science, especially at that early stage. And so, you know, we use a lot of comparable data and deals that we've seen in the market because the biggest thing that can turn off an investor, I mean, if you've ever watched that show Dragon's Den or Shark Tank, they go in and go, you know, I'm going to give you 2% of my business for $500,000. And they go, you know, where have you got that number from? So,
yeah. Okay. And so how do businesses like yourself make money then?
So we, like any service business, we charge a consulting fee. So, you know, we charge an hourly rate to whatever it is that we need, different hourly rate depending on the type of work that's needed. And then if we're brokering a deal, we take a percentage of raised funds, essentially. So that's kind of the model that's adopted throughout the world, really, for investment banking.
Okay. And we talked about how difficult it is to get money at the moment. If I compare that to probably 2 years ago when there was money sloshing around Christchurch and Auckland and Wellington and the whole of New Zealand, money was cheap, we got told, and it was just constantly accessible. And then one day it's not there, right? So just tell us why that's changed.
Oh, a little thing called COVID-19 came along. So, you know, that put the world in a bit of a tiz. And, you know, in doing so, when you lock down countries across the world, your central banks need to do something about that to keep the economy going. So the easiest, most standard way is, you know, what the fancy term of it is quantitative easing, which is literally the Reserve Bank printing money, essentially, and putting that money into the economy to stimulate it, to keep it going. In doing so, that creates inflation, as we, you know, I think a lot of New Zealanders hadn't heard that term for a long time because we were always in a low inflation market. Now we're in a high inflation market. So all of a sudden, the central banks have one mechanism traditionally to combat inflation, which is rise interest rates. And when you rise interest rates, it has a knock-on effect to a whole bunch of different things, as we probably even saw over the weekend with the Silicon Valley Bank crash. You know, that has detrimental effects on the market because all of a sudden money gets harder to get because there's less investor sentiment, because you create a bear market because valuations are dropping. And those that can get the money, it's more expensive. So yeah, it's just the natural sort of flow and effect of trying to stop the economy from spending money is by stopping businesses, you know, either getting access to it or making it harder to get access to it.
And one thing I've just struggled to, and I mean, I worked in banking for a little while, so I kind of understand probably a little bit more than some people, but I just can't understand why money started drying up. So I went to a conference in the States in September, and even then it was fairly apparent that money was starting to dry up. And ultimately it was because VCs and investors and even the people that fund the VCs, is it LPs? Is that
limited partners? Yeah.
A limited partner. So there's a hierarchy, right? So they stop giving the VCs money, which means the VCs stop giving, you know,
right,
businesses money. But is that simply because interest rates are going up elsewhere, they can get a decent return on other assets and other things?
A little bit of that. It's all to do with investor sentiment and risk. You know, like VC is the riskiest asset class you can probably get, apart from, well, maybe derivatives and, you know, currency exchange and that kind of stuff can be pretty risky as well. But VC, you know, you're locking your money away for quite some time in the hopes that it will get you a 5x return on it, for example. Yeah. So, you know, traditionally, it's always been the smaller end of a portfolio that's been invested into VC. The bulk of, you know, pension money and such is always put into more traditional assets of managed funds, which is a mixture of, you know, domestic and international equities on licensed stock exchanges, fixed asset return, fixed cash returns from, you know, government bonds and bank bonds and such, and probably a bit of property here and there and a variety of other different asset classes. The VC one has always been the, let's put 5% of our portfolio in that because, you know, we can afford to lose it if we need to. Now, when you've got a market where your safer assets are dropping in valuation and interest rates are going up, and, you know, all of a sudden you're like, as we saw with Silicon Valley Bank, you know, they put $80 billion into a 10-year bond rate. But what happened was the interest rates increased so that the bond rates for a shorter term were higher than the 10-year term. So why would new investors want to put their money in the 10 years where they could get more return for shorter term? So therefore, the value of the bond dropped. You know, so that's why that whole bank collapsed. So what it does is it creates that investor sentiment of risk. And so then risk people naturally attract more towards safer assets. So that's why it dries up.
Okay, so essentially it's because tech businesses are seen as quite risky, that then that's why they've said, well, we won't invest in them anymore. We'll kind of invest in other things. Because it does feel that the tech market's the one that's been hit the hardest, right?
I think, look, with the tech market, I mean, if anyone was watching market over the last few years, we were having crazy valuations out there. You know, like it was clearly a bubble. You know, when you're valuing a company that's not making money at 15 times its revenue, there's always got to be, well, what's that intrinsic fundamental? Can this business actually stand on its own two legs without needing constant capital invested into it? And if the answer is no, then in a downturn market, it's going to fail, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And one thing I thought was fascinating over in the States in September was it was almost like a unique idea that businesses made money. So, and it was profitable, right? So over there, it was a case of, no, what we'll do is we'll go and give this business money, and it's all about how long the runway is and how long they will last before they need more money. And I was just like, you know, coming from a business where I suppose just an industry where you have to make money because you've got wages to pay, and I suppose because we've never really needed that funding. But yeah, it just thought it's crazy, right? It's just that how many businesses can survive without.
You do wonder, yeah, you're right. Like I remember, yeah, a couple of years ago when we were talking to some American investors and we were asking about, you know, what valuation metrics, you know, which multiple of EBITDA, and they're I think they were like, what's EBITDA?
And what is that? So once again, for listeners who are probably not as financially astute as yourself, how would you explain what that is?
Earnings before interest, tax and depreciation, amortization. So essentially, what's the profit of the business before tax?
Okay. So that leads us nicely onto another thing I really wanted to grill you on was around valuations for businesses. So how do you best value a business? Because EBITDA is one method. So that's where you would say, how much profit did the business make? And you say it's a multiple of that, four or five, if you're lucky, you know. And so that's one method, valuation. Is that the most common, would you say?
Yes and no. Valuations, you know, there's that classic, it's a bit of an art more than a science. There's different methods available depending on the nature of why you're valuing it. So this is why it's a little bit different to like with the housing market, for example, is based on what's the current market value based on comparable sales. So what did the house down the road sell for, you know? With a business, each business is quite different. You know, a house is a house. It's just got different land area and different layout. But a tech business versus an engineering business versus an accounting firm are very different types of assets. So some have got reoccurring revenue, some have no reoccurring revenue. So yeah, you've really got to look at it from a couple of different angles. So the most commonly adopted methods is, yes, multiple of earnings. So that's multiple of EBITDA, and, you know, depending on the nature of it, sometimes they add back in the owner's wages. And as you know, in business, there's always stuff in the profit and loss statement, like home office expense and motor vehicle expense that, you know, can be added back in because it's not a true cost of the business. It's just a perk, so to speak. So, and depreciation, for example, that's a non-cash item. So, you know, depending on the type of business, you would include it or you wouldn't include it. So that all gets back added back in. And then they usually apply a multiple of that number based on comparable sales. So they'll look at other companies of similar nature and what did they sell for.
So it's now a good time to buy a business, would you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you're in the market to buy a business, because valuations are under pressure. And so, you know, that's the most common method, but there is other methods. So, like, for example, with the tech companies, and as I mentioned before, you know, that 10, 15x of revenue, we call that the multiple of revenue. And the reason that that valuation method is adopted, particularly for early stage tech companies, is because they don't have profit. So you can't multiply something that's negative because it's not really going to work well, is it?
Yeah.
So what they look at it is they go, okay, well, let's look at this and go, if they've got significant market share from a merger and acquisition perspective, if I was to buy this business, integrate it with our own, we can align the staff and create and actually bring it to profitability because we've got the infrastructure to do so. And in doing so, we're going to gain market share, which would increase our own valuation. Then it's worth buying. So they'll look at it on, okay, well, what's that multiple of revenue look like? And that's a very basic term of it. There's obviously a lot of research that goes into it. And then there's the other fact of, you know, intellectual property, you know. So intellectual property doesn't have to be patents and such. It can just be pure around know-how, brand, staff, for example. And, you know, there's a great New Zealand story. If you go back quite a few years with Green Button. So Green Button was a New Zealand success story. So it was one of the first players in cloud computing. And they were bought by Microsoft. And the reason Microsoft bought it was because they looked at it and went, yeah, absolutely. You guys have got some great technology that you've built. We don't necessarily need your client base because we're Microsoft, but we can then use that technology for our own product. And we could build it ourselves, but it'd probably take us 5 years, or we could just buy you and do it. And that's what they did. And they took all the staff, and the staff went from working in Green Button one day to Microsoft the other day. So it was great. And I think that platform, the technology, underlying technology of that actually powers Microsoft Azure. So that gives you an idea of how powerful that is. So when you look at that, you look at it on an IP basis. And then the final method, which is, you know, if anyone studied finance in college or university, would have probably have always come across the term called discounted cash flow. Now, that's where you look at a business based on its future earnings by the cash flows that it's going to generate for investors, and then discounting it back based on a discount rate as of today. So you get what's called the net present value.
That sounds complicated.
It is. And it's got its pros and cons, because, you know, it's that whole time value of money. A dollar today is worth more than a dollar in the future, so you have to be compensated for it. But you're relying on projections and then inputs based on weighted average cost of capital and a whole bunch of other fancy terms.
So what's your preferred method, would you say, to valuing a business?
Again, it comes down to what's the purpose of it. The multiple of earnings at the moment is probably the best one to go by, because at the moment people aren't really looking at the multiple of revenue, because the idea is the market is a little bit bearish. So, you know, there's going to be less of those kind of transactions at a higher number going to be. So there's less capital to be put into those businesses to keep that runway going. So you're probably better backing profitable businesses or businesses that have got some good cash flows. So it's better to look at either that multiple of earnings, maybe a discounted cash flow, depending on the type of business as well.
Okay. So another thing I thought it'd be really good to pick your brains on is the different stages. So we hear about, they've just done a raise, and, you know, I think sometimes it's a different language for some people out there, right? So you have your initial seed. Is that the first stage, or is it pre-seed?
You can have pre-seed,
So we just talk through the stages of, and look, this is probably more aimed at the tech businesses, I'm guessing, but, you know, at the same time, it probably could also be for other businesses as well, right?
So, that's right.
So the first stage of a business, if we look at, I'm going to go and create Joe Blogs Widgets, which is a, you know, revolutionary widget seller in Christchurch. I'm making it up as I go along here. But just talk me through what the first stage would be of a business in terms of capital. So what would be the first stage?
So let's say, for example, we're going to do that full venture capital cycle. So we're going to go, I've got a great idea. this is what it is, but I need some money to get it off the ground. That's pre-seed. Then you go, I've got it off the ground. It's doing some good stuff. It might be generating revenue or it's close to generating revenue, but now we need to hire some staff because we want to start scaling up. Cool. Yeah. That's seed money. So yeah. You've now got the foundations built. Then you get into what's called the Series A. Yeah. Series A is where we're generating revenues and now we want to expand, typically, you know, internationally, and we need to bring on some staff or we're going to do some further research and development. I'm going to exclude like deep tech because deep tech can go like 15 years not making a damn thing and then it'll sell for huge amounts of money. So I'm just going to work on, say, technology. And then it's very simple after that. It's Series B, Series C, Series D, Series E. It just really depends on how big that business gets.
And is it, in terms of the business you look after, Dave, is it mainly tech businesses or is it as a mixture? But you work on the same principles of you know, seed, pre-seed, that you know, the same terms?
I try not to use those terms because it's very, like, it puts people in buckets and I'm always never a fan of doing that. That's part of the reason why I wanted to leave the bank because, you know, what a Series A to one person is different to another, you know. Yeah. So, you know, you can get very caught up with, oh, you know, your valuation's not this, so it can't be a Series A. So we have to look at it like this. So therefore, we only do these metrics. And I don't like that kind of thing. We deal with all kinds of businesses, not just tech. So, you know, I deal with engineering businesses. I deal with professional services. I'm dealing with a food manufacturer at the moment, for example. So those kind of people wouldn't want to do a Series A, a Series B, or a Series D, or whatever it might look like. But we'll help them with, you know, just standard, either straight debt investment or, you know, a little bit of equity here and there. So yeah, it typically is those tech companies that have that Series A beyond.
Yeah. So one other question I've got, who are those investors typically?
So you've got professional investors being, you know, venture capital firms. So you would have heard like Movac, for example, that's one of the big ones, Movac, Alpharens, Blackbird. Oh, there's a whole heap of them across
the show.
And
these are the big ones in New Zealand? So who are the big ones in New Zealand?
Movac would be the biggest. So yeah. They're the kind of, you know, they're the guys that backtrade me and that. They've sort of been around the longest. So, you know, they're the big players. And then, yeah, like, say, so you've got Blackbird, you've got Alpharens, you've got, there's a whole heap of them. And then Australia as well. Quite a few of the Australian ones like to dip their toe in New Zealand as well. So that's your professional-based investors. And then obviously you've got like your angel groups. So everyone's heard of sort of like the terms angel investors. So, you know, you've got, those are sort of individuals and high net worth individuals. And so, you know, they will sort of typically come in at that very early stage, typically that sort of pre-seed round before a VC might come in. And, you know, they'll chuck in maybe 5 to 20 grand each type thing. And yeah, so you've got angel groups across New Zealand as well. You go up and do your pitch night and all that kind of stuff. And then later down the track and a little bit higher, then you've got your larger based investors, which is, you know, your institutional based funders, which is like your ACC and your family offices, a lot of EWE funds and that kind of stuff. And that's typically bigger checks. And that's when you're getting into that world of sort of private equity. So it's the same, different. Basically, private equity is just a bigger check where a private equity firm will come in and take a majority stake in the business to either exit the owner or give it that last push that's needed before it goes on to a stock exchange or being sold or something along those lines.
Do you have your favorite? So do you have like, is it based on the deal? You know,
based on the deal. Everyone's got different appetites, you know. Yeah. So, you know, there's some, like, for example, Pacific Channel, you know, they're really good in that sort of deep tech and IP based space. That's kind of their type of one. I wouldn't take a pie shop to them, for example. It's be more, you know, something that's in that sort of.
Might be a pie shop available up north, right?
You never know. So, you know, they're all very different. Yeah, they've all got their different strengths as well.
Okay, all right. And so we know who the investors are. How hard do we think it is at the moment to be launching a business?
Yeah, pretty hard. But, you know, it's one of those things, it's a good time to innovate and grow. In some respects, it's just because, you know, you've got a lot of businesses that will be looking to exit, and not because, it might be because they're failing. It might be because, you know, they might just have had enough. You know, there's a lot of business owners that have got fatigue because, you know, we've had all the things that have happened, especially in New Zealand over the last few years with COVID and weather events and, you know, everything else that's happened, you know, mosque shootings, all that kind of stuff. It all wears on you. And then obviously you've got rising inflation on top of that. So costs are going up and up and up. So, and then, you know, minimum wage has just gone up as well. So, you know, that means that businesses are having to pay more now because wages have gone up. But, you know, it's just a lot of people are tired, to be honest. So it's actually a good time if you're in the position to be able to gain a bit of market share because there's still business out there to be done. So
if we look at your portfolio at the moment and the businesses you're trying to raise money for, any that are kind of gems at the moment? So anyone listening that's after wants to take a bit of a punt, or you know, so what would be some of those gems you've got on your stable?
Look, so first of all, this does not constitute financial advice under the FMA.
Like it, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
You know, if you're looking at especially these type of assets because they're incredibly risky, but and obviously for confidentiality, I can't talk about specific deals, but one deal I can talk about because we did it just before Christmas for our own fund that we've got. We backed a business called Astute Access, so they're doing incredible stuff in that sort of locks infrastructure space. So they do padlocks for large infrastructure clients. So technically a tech business because it's software that goes behind the lock, but you know, intrinsically you look at it and go, really? How big is that market? And it's absolutely massive. So yeah, they've that was a great round, and yeah, they're going from strength to strength. So probably be looking to do another round with them shortly. So yeah, and again, I can talk about that one because yeah, we did it via Newbrook Capital, which is our own little fund as well.
Yeah. Okay. So there are some gems still out there for anyone who's looking to invest.
It's actually a great time to invest because valuations are down. Right. So not so great for the business owners, and that's why I'm doing a lot more of what's called venture debt based funding. Yeah. I can talk. That's it's getting a little bit technical if I go into the details of that, but it's essentially, you know, a debt type facility that is more equity based risk as opposed to bank.
Okay. So if we just take a couple of steps back, Dave, and just look at the economy overall, how would you describe the state of the New Zealand economy at the moment?
I think, you know, it's edging towards recession, isn't it? You know, that's what all the economists are saying. You know, I think, you know, yes, there probably will be a recession, especially with what we've seen since, you know, the Silicon Bank Valley fallout and how that's affected the stock markets and stuff. So things are starting to contract, and with rising interest rates to try and beat inflation, that is going to have effect. I think we've got 120 billion home loans that still need to roll over onto the new fixed rates. Wow. That's what keeps me up at night because I look at that and go, oh my God, you know, we've got 95% of our our household debt. So like mortgages, like you and I, and personal debt is about 95% to GDP. So that's some of the highest in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's quite a scary number. And then we've got, you know, 120 billion about to roll over onto new fixed rates. And I think we've got about 9% of Auckland is on interest only. So that's what worries me. So I think we will edge towards recession, but I think it'll be more of like, again, I'm not an economist and this is not advice and stuff, but I think it'll be more of like a technical recession.
Okay, so we're back online. You might notice a slight difference in the volume and the echo in the room. So hopefully we can try and adjust this slightly with the editing. But one of the joys of working in a very busy office environment, eh, Dave?
It is. I do love working in a shared space, though. But yeah, sometimes it has its disadvantages. Yeah.
So we just got booted out of our nice, glamorous pod that we was in for the interview. So we'll pick this up. So for everyone that was listening just a minute ago, the state of the New Zealand economy. Yeah, let's just go again on that. So how would you describe the state of the New Zealand economy at present?
Oh, look, so again, yeah, not being an economist, but, you know, it's definitely getting tougher out there for businesses. You know, I think, you know, personally, what I've seen is a lot of businesses, what we call your debtor days, so the days that it takes you to get paid, is starting to stretch out. And then also I'm starting to see a lot more businesses start to rack up some arrears around the GST, for example. So what that's telling me is that, you know, cash flow is really starting to tighten up, and that could be again caused because, you know, access to capital from, you know, traditional banking sectors has dried up a little bit. And then also, you know, when you've got rising costs on top of that, obviously that's going to erode margin, productivity and profitability. So that's going to affect it as well. And then I touched on the sort of housing side of things as well, and there's a bit of a canary in a coal mine there. And so I think we are going to get into a bit of a tough winter for a lot of Kiwis.
Okay. And how would you say would be the best way to kind of circumnavigate that storm that's coming?
Oh, I love the term, you know, adapt to thrive, not to adapt to survive. You know, it's a case of, you know, if you're, you know, talking from a business perspective, you know, it's all about looking at your business and understanding the market that you work in and who your customers are. And then understanding, you know, why is it that they use you? Why is it they pay the fees that they do? Or why do they buy the product that you have that's better than others? And then sort of adjusting for that as well, going, well, if there is a downturn and my sales were to drop, how do I make my expenses match that? You know, where can I increase either margin for productivity? Or how do I decrease costs by, you know, unfortunately, as we've seen, you know, Xero just let go of 800 people. I think the warehouse did 400. And, you know, I think Tradewindow, which is another tech company as well, is about to slash about a third of its workforce as well. So, you know, those are the unfortunate things that have to happen to keep a business going.
Yep. Why do you think the tech companies are laying so many people off?
Oh, it's access to capital, you know. So like, you know, if you were to read Newsdesk or Business Desk or whatever it's called, with the trade one window one, for example, you know, great business, great concept of what they're trying to solve there. But in their last round for 20 million, they only raised 5. So the challenge you've got there is that that's not enough to keep that runway going as it currently does on their current trajectory of what they were planning to do. So you got to reevaluate and thrive and adapt to thrive, basically.
Okay. So that's kind of on the business side. Obviously, for those that maybe are working for people or, you know, working for organization that maybe aren't business, but the economy is still looking pretty rocky, I would say, over the next sort of 6 to 12 months at least. So any tips you'd give for people on who, you know, just for who are just fighting the fight, right? Don't necessarily own a business or...
Oh, look, so, you know, being married with 3 children, you know, I know exactly what it's like with rising costs in a household. So groceries, my God, the amount of money that we spend in this country on our own groceries to buy our own butter and milk is just ridiculous. So challenge you've got when you're, you know... an employee as such, you've got a fixed income, don't you? So yeah. It's good and bad, you know, like sometimes being self-employed, I would love to have a bit of a fixed income, knowing what's coming in exactly every week. But the cons you've got to that is that's what you've got to work with. So you've got to, again, similar to businesses, okay, well, if I've got rising costs in my mortgage or I've got rising costs in my rent and my food bill's gone up, my power bill's gone up, I might get a little bit of a reprieve because I'm getting a slightly higher wage now because of where the market is, but it's still probably not in line with inflation is. Yeah. You've got to just budget and make some hard decisions on, you know, what's necessity and what's a luxury item, you know. Can we afford to have Netflix or do we have to spend that on groceries?
Always need Netflix. Yeah. Eat less salad. No, that's a fair point. No, I mean, all jokes aside, I think you have to really sort of tighten your belt and cut your cloth accordingly, right? And I think I said to someone the other day, I think if you've been around the block a few times or at least once, you know, we can remember those recessions. I can remember it hurts, right? And people lose their jobs and families get, you know, torn apart because they have to leave their home and kids have to change schools. So I think, it's not nice times when you
no, but look, there's also good things going on as well. You know, like New Zealand does have low unemployment, essentially. So that tells me that, you know, it's because, you know, we haven't had an influx of people coming into the country, which has got its own challenges because obviously they've got a tight labor market, especially in, you know, like the fruit picking industry, for example. But what it does mean is because of that, there is that whole supply and demand thing as well, as that businesses are still needing people, which is driving up the value of wages because there's less people that are qualified to do those jobs around. So you need to be able to be, you know, pick the right people. So there's good things going on there. And that's why, you know, I don't think we're going to see massive, massive layoffs. You know, I think it's just there will be some, obviously, but there's still plenty of work out there for people that are capable and wanting to do the work.
Yep. Okay. And if we go back into business then, so obviously you must know a lot of people in business and you've dealt with a lot of businesses. One of the things that I still despair at is the waste and the inefficiencies of a lot of businesses, and mainly through their processes. You know, they use paper pads and triplicate pads and all that kind of stuff because that's the way they've done it for the last 15, 20 years. But if you kind of just have a little think about some of the businesses that you've kind of interacted with over the last, you know, how many years you've kind of been in New Zealand, where do you think businesses can be more productive?
So if we look at what the challenge is, right, is that 97% of all New Zealand business is a small to medium business. So it's typically a owner-occupier business. So it doesn't have a professional board as such, and it's literally you working in the business. It's the guy that owns the plumbing business. It's the guy that has the shop that employs 10 people as such. So in doing so, you know, there's that old saying of you're wearing the 10 hats. You know, you're doing everything from finance to HR in the business and doing the work as well. So when it comes to, you know, lack of productivity, I think that's the underlying issue is, you know, to understand productivity, you have to be able to look at the business in real time, don't you? And, you know, like me from a finance perspective, I'm always either looking in the rear view mirror because I'm looking at accounts based on what the business has done. And I can work out ratios based on productivity, based on, you know, wages versus revenue, et cetera. And then I can look at sort of forecasting, you know, as I said before, I've never seen a bad one, but you know, to get that real time data, but to get the business owner to actually be able to take a step out of the business and look at that is a challenging thing. But then there's been a huge change in technology over the last 5-10 years, hasn't there? You know, like myself and our business, you know, like I spend quite a bit of money on software for subscriptions because I use DocuSign, I use Xero, I use Xero Projects to record the time that then pulls through to the invoicing. Because again, I found that myself, I was completely slammed by the admin side of things that was stopping me from doing my work. So there is technology solutions out there that can help you. But the challenge you've got is that there's so many of them. And that's the thing, is that you're using one system to do one thing, one system to do the other. And when you're stuck in the business, wearing those 10 hats, dealing with the day-to-day grind of it, it just becomes a bit too hard and people just stick to the status quo.
Yep. Okay. If you could give free tips to any budding business at the moment, or someone that's just about to launch a business or start a business, what would those free kind of super tips be?
Don't be afraid to charge. So don't undervalue yourself. You know, if you add value to your client or business and you believe in that value, then the market will meet that. So that's one thing, because if you keep discounting to win business, you can only go down. So, you know, and margin is really important at the moment with rising costs. That would be the next thing, is keep an eye on those costs. Because yeah, like you say, they can differ from month to month as the price of your personal life and your business life starts increasing. So, you know, get some good accounting software or get a bookkeeper if you're not confident in doing it yourself, to keep an eye on what's going on in the business and its margins. And then, finally, you know, build up your resilience, because, you know, it's not all sunshine and roses. Being in business is bloody hard, I'm not going to lie. So you've got to be resilient. You've got to be able to pick yourself up when you've had the bad days.
Yep. Okay. All right. One last question I'm going to ask everyone, I think, going forward. I think I asked Hillary this as well. If you could go back and give some advice to 21-year-old Dave, what would that be? Don't eat the yellow snow.
That's a good one, actually. I really don't know, to be honest. I'm trying to think. It's one of those things. It's like we sort of talked about before we start this, actually. It's a journey, isn't it? So, like, hindsight's a great thing, but at the same time, you know, I've done a lot of stupid stuff in my life, like, you know, getting myself trapped in cars and setting off fire extinguishers and all these kind of silly things. And I've made business mistakes as well. But, you know, the reality is have you learned from it? You pick yourself up, and how do you, you know, not repeat that, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Brilliant. So Dave, just before we go, obviously opportunity to tell listeners kind of what Newbrook does and where they can contact you.
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially Newbrook helps businesses move forward. That's basically what we try to do. And that's through access to capital, or is understanding what's going on in the business and what those barriers are. So if you want to reach out to us, obviously go to website. So newbrook.co.nz. But to be honest, most people find me on LinkedIn. So just look up Dave Armstrong NZ on LinkedIn and you'll come across me.
Okay. Fantastic, Dave. Thanks so much for your time. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks for that. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, Dave. Bye. And that's it. Number two, done and dusted. Really enjoyed talking to Dave yesterday. Liked how he was able to put it into a language that everyone could understand. And I think Dave's got some really good and some well-educated views on the economy in New Zealand and further afield. Certainly as we're going into tough times, I think in the next sort of 6 to 12 months, would be good to take on some of Dave's advice. So that's it. Number two, done and dusted. As I said before, if you did like what you heard, please follow and like the show on whatever platform it is you're listening to it on. And if you do know anyone that's got a really good story to tell around how they've been productive, or they've made other people productive around them, then please do tell them to get in touch. Best way to do that is lee@leestevens.co. That's lee@leestevens.co, or just go to the website, which is www.leestevens.co, and you'll be able to get my contact details on there. So yeah, number two, done and dusted. We've got, I think, the next four shows locked in and loaded over the next few weeks. So really looking forward to those. Look forward to catching up with some more interesting guests then.